if you really think about it, your employees spend the major chunk of their day with you. Let's imagine they work with you from 9 o'clock to 5 o'clock. That's 8 hours. That's 1/3 of their natural day, right? So if people are going to spend 8 hours with you, at the minimum, it should be cordial. The relationship should be cordial. They should feel like you care, right? So, but that's, having said that, you can be friendly, you can be informal with your employees, but you have to make sure that you're not seen as a pushover, you know? You have to make sure that you're not seen as a pushover who can be taken advantage of. And this can be very subtle, because in my experience, there are employees who don't understand boundaries. So because you're friendly with the boss, because, you know, the relationship is informal with the boss, you can walk up to the boss and, you know, share your concerns, speak up. And some people tend to abuse that relationship. Some employees tend to abuse that level of access. And sometimes it can border on disrespect, which is something you don't want.
Every big thing starts small. It's a natural law. Every big multinational corporation was once a small business. Welcome to the Small Starter Business Podcast, a unique podcast for practical tips and advice to help you start, grow, or turn around your business.
Hello, and welcome to another interesting episode of the Small Starter Business Podcast. In fact, this promises not just to be an interesting episode, but a mildly controversial episode. And I think it's all in the title. It's all in the topic of today's episode, which is it better to be loved or feared by your employees, right? So you are a business owner, you own a business, or you're an entrepreneur. Essentially, you run some kind of venture that sells products or services, and you have people who work for you, who work with you, right? And these people are employees. They are on your team, right? So the question is it better to be loved by these people who work for you, or is it better to be feared, right? So I'm going to explore this controversial topic. And in the end, I'm going to tell you what I think, what my personal philosophy or answer to this question is. And the reason why this topic is important is I tend to work with a lot of interesting entrepreneurs. I work with entrepreneurs in a wide range of industries, from manufacturing and agribusiness to fashion and retail and tech, right? So when I get into conversations, or maybe we're having some kind of brainstorming or strategy session, or maybe we're just sharing ideas and talking, this is one element I try to pry from the conversation, which is, you know, what's the nature of the relationship between entrepreneurs and their employees? And what I find is quite interesting. There are more or less about, let's say, two major schools of thought, right? There are some people who believe that employees should fear you, and that's the best way to get value from them. And there are those people who think that it doesn't make any sense for your employees to fear you. These are people who work for you. That it makes more sense for your employees to love you. So you have to do as much as you can to appease them for them to essentially love you, right? So another reason why this topic is important is that it's all about motivation. What is the best way to motivate people who work for you? And that's what we're talking about, fear and love, love and fear, because these are two very opposite emotions, or two very opposite strategies that are used to motivate people. You can motivate people through fear and they will work for you, and you can also motivate people through love and they will work for you. So it's all about motivation. The only thing now is, what is the best strategy to achieve motivation? Is it fear, or is it love? And now, you know, the reason why motivation is important is that without motivation, people won't work for you. You know, if people are not motivated, aside from, say, salary, you pay people to work for you, right? You know, most people show up for work because they want to earn that salary, which in itself is some level of motivation, is a financial motivation. But the truth is, without motivation, people will not work for you. Without motivation, even worse, you can't lead people effectively. Every leader, one of the major roles a leader plays is that you have to motivate your people. Now, the question is, which is the reason why we're having this conversation in this episode, right? What is the best way to do that job as a leader of motivating your people? Should you do it through fear, or should you do it through love? And that's exactly what I want to explore in this episode. These two contrasting extreme positions of motivating through fear or motivating through love. Now, let me talk first about fear, and then I'll talk about love, right? Now, the principle of fear, of using fear to motivate your employees, is that, you know, people will work as long as they fear you and can avoid your punishment. And that's really what fear is about. You motivate your employees so that they do not want to run foul of your rules and they do not want your punishment. That punishment could range from, you know, deducting some of their pay, sending them on some form of suspension or unpaid leave or something like that. Essentially, you're ruling through punishment. If they don't do something you want, you punish them. If they do what you want, no punishment. So the fear principle is all about avoiding punishment. So people will work for you as long as they can avoid your punishment. Now, a boss or a leader who motivates through fear, I just want to help you. I want to run through a couple of traits or features or characteristics so that you have a better and more intimate understanding of what it looks like to lead your employees or motivate your employees through fear. So there are a couple of characteristics that a boss who rules or motivates through fear would have. One of it would be, you know, the boss is distant. So when you rule through fear, you try not to be friendly with your employees. You try not to be too close or friendly with your employees. You keep the relationship very formal. So there are no first names or whatever. You address the boss as Mr. or whoever, but the relationship is formal and it is distant. So you can't really say your employees are your friends. They are your employees, right? That's one way, that's one feature of that kind of leadership. Another is that you tend to be difficult, strict, and unyielding. And this is intentional because you want to stick to the rules, and usually the rules are firm. Sometimes you can come across as insensitive. Many times you're not willing to negotiate. And what you have this kind of take it or leave it attitude. So you set the rules, you know, you don't accommodate dissenting opinions or even negotiations on the rules. It's a take it or leave it attitude. And you don't give enough breathing space to your employees. So you focus a whole lot on supervision, close supervision, and close monitoring. That's the kind of style that you're using when you are trying to motivate through fear. Another feature is that you tend to be largely suspicious. And that's because you believe that employees cannot be trusted. So when you're motivating through fear, there's always that level of suspicion that, you know, these people cannot be trusted. Employees cannot be trusted. You think that they will steal or cheat you and your business if you give them the chance. So you try your best not to give them any chance. You give them a close supervision, close monitoring. Another characteristic of this type of strategy is you come across as punishing and unforgiving. Because you believe the strength of using fear over your employees is anchored in punishment. So you believe in using punishment to spread fear among your employees. So if anybody goes against the rules or does not do what they're supposed to do, you tend to make sure that that person does not go unpunished and that other people learn about that punishment so that they can avoid it in future. So you have this atmosphere, this environment of fear where people are scared of the boss, or they are scared of the management, and they are just trying their best. They're just doing their best to avoid punishment. And like I mentioned, essentially, these people are not your slaves, right? So it's not as if you can mete out any form of physical punishment, you know, on these people. But like I mentioned before, it can range from deducting from their pay, reducing their pay, firing them, sending them on some suspension, some form of unpaid leave, terminating their appointment, all sorts of things that employees are likely going to be afraid of. So that is the pervading sense within your employees that, you know, just stick to the rules and avoid punishment. So that's it about fear. Now, let me talk about the other side, which is love, you know, motivating through love. And at this point in the episode, I'm not taking a side. I'm trying my best to be objective and look at each of them dispassionately. And then towards the end of this episode, I'm going to tell you where I stand and what I think the best strategy is. So let's talk about love. Now, the love principle says that if people love you, if your employees love you, they will work hard for you and sacrifice for you even when you're not there. So that's a principle of love, that if you show these people love, if you appreciate them, if you show them that they matter, that they will work hard for you and they will make personal sacrifices for you even when you are not there, right? And some of the features you can see in this kind of strategy where you're trying to use love to motivate your employees is that the relationship between the leader, between the boss and the employees is quite close and sensitive. So in this case, it's not unusual that the boss will be friendly with the employees. Maybe most times they're on a first name basis. They already know, even they're already close, even at the family level. So they attend each other's function. It's not unusual for the boss to show up for an employee's child's birthday party or something. So there is a level of informality and closeness in the relationship. And the boss tries to keep the relationship informal. It's not unusual for the boss to make inquiries about how the employee is feeling, how their family is doing, how is the wife, how are the kids, and things like that. And you tend to be sensitive to the needs of your people, right? So that's one clear characteristic. There's an informal relationship, there's a friendly relationship, and the boss is sensitive to the needs of the people. Another quality, another characteristic is that when you use love to motivate employees, you come off as generous and forgiving, right? So unlike fear, when you are motivating through love, you focus more on rewards than punishment. So you reward good behavior instead of punishing bad behavior. So that's the focus of using love to motivate. And you use a combination of financial and non-financial rewards to encourage and motivate employees. So this can range from financial benefits like bonuses, or you send somebody on some all-expense-paid trip or something. But bottom line is you're using rewards. You're rewarding those people who have done well, who have done a good job. You're focusing on the rewards instead of punishing the people who are not doing so well, right? So that's an important feature there. Another feature is you tend to give your employees a degree of freedom and flexibility. And that is because you believe that people are inherently good and can be trusted with responsibility. And because you believe that people are good and can be trusted with responsibility, you don't see any reason to closely supervise them or always monitoring them or always suspecting. So unlike the fear side, when you are trying to motivate through love, you tend to, there's a degree of trust, there's a degree of freedom that your employees have, there's a degree of flexibility that they have to take decisions and do things, right? So now I've talked about the two sides, the two strategies for motivating employees. You know, I've talked about fear, you know, what it feels like when your employees fear you. And I've talked about love, what it feels like when your employees love you. So the question is, which is better, right? Which is better? Is fear better? Is it better when your employees fear you, or is it better when your employees love you? Now, to answer this interesting question, I'm going to look at the two sides of the story in a different dimension. Now, when you talk about fear, you tend to look at interesting figures like Machiavelli, Niccolo Machiavelli. Niccolo Machiavelli was, I think it was in the 1500s, he was a political theorist who wrote the very interesting popular book known as The Prince. And what Machiavelli says is that Machiavelli says it is better to be feared than to be loved, especially when you cannot be both to people. So if you had to choose between fear and love, what Machiavelli is saying is that it is better to be feared than to be loved. And that's because he claims that fear is a stronger motivation than love, that when people fear you, the effect you have on them is stronger than when they love you. So I'm not saying this is a fact. I'm saying this is Machiavelli's opinion. And this opinion was made clear in the 1500s, and it has survived up to date. So when you hear that somebody is Machiavellian or his strategy is Machiavellian, it's a matter of the end justifies the end will justify the means, right? So it's better that you are hard-nosed, unfeeling, insensitive, inhuman. It's better that people fear you, right? So now let's look at the downsides of fear. When your employees fear you. I'll do this for fear, and I'll also do it for the love side. Now, the key downsides of when you motivate people through fear is that you will end up with a timid and cowardly workforce. The people, most of the people who end up working with you, the people who will stay with you, you will find out that they are mostly timid and cowardly. These are employees who will be afraid to speak up, and they will even be afraid to even contribute valuable ideas because they are afraid. When people are afraid, it is safer to keep quiet, to keep short, to keep your thoughts to yourself, keep your ideas to yourself, keep your complaints to yourself. You are safer when you don't say anything. Because if you rile up the boss, or you know what, you say something the wrong way, you're going to be punished. So in an environment where people are afraid of punishment, what you see is a lot of timidity and cowardice. So that's what you're going to end up with. Another downside of motivating through fear is that your employees tend to only do as much work as possible to avoid punishment. So your employees are not working most times because they enjoy working for you or because they enjoy the job. They're just doing it so that they can earn their pay, their salary, their wages, whatever. They will not go above and beyond. They will just do enough work to justify their payment. So what this means is that you end up with employees who will not make bold moves, who will not make sacrifices, who will not take risks for you. They will only do as they are told. So essentially, you end up with robots. You will end up with drones, people who just do as they are told. They don't do anything more. They don't do anything more. If they find a way, they will do something less, but they will not do more than is necessary. So they will just do as much as is necessary, but they will not make any bold moves. They are not going to make any sacrifices for you. They are not going to take risks for you. Another downside of motivating through fear is that, you know, when you have an environment of fear, it is difficult to retain good people. So people who know what they know, people who are confident in what they know, those people will not stick around. They will easily leave you once they get a better option. Once they get a better offer, they're going to leave you. The people who will stay with you are the timid ones, the ones who believe that, you know, as long as they can avoid your punishment, it's a fair deal when they work with you. But you see those really bright people, the people who can help you change the game in your business, the bright, the talented, the intelligent ones, the articulate ones, the ones who come up with ideas, the ones who have something to say. As long as they can't find that kind of environment, you know, working with you, they're going to leave you. That's very clear. And then another interesting downside of motivating people through fear is that you're going to sow a seed of distrust. The environment where you work, there will be a sense of distrust. There will be this whole, there is us and there is them. So there's an us versus them situation where there is management and there's the rest. So the thing about distrust, when people don't trust each other, is that distrust is contagious. It can be contagious. You know, so people may not trust you if you don't trust them. And that can lead to several different ugly problems. So, for example, anything you say, they might not believe you. You know, and sometimes you're wondering why they don't believe you. The truth is, you're only getting back what you've given, which is that because you don't trust them, they don't trust you. So these are some of the interesting downsides of motivating people through fear. So like I started with, I said, Machiavelli believes that it's better to be feared than to be loved. If you believe that, that's fine. But I just wanted you to know that there are certain downsides to following that kind of strategy to motivate your people. Now, let's talk about love, right? Love, too, can have its own downsides. But then, just like I picked on Machiavelli, I also want to pick on another person who more or less believes that love is the way to go, which is John Quincy Adams. I believe he was a president of the U.S. at one time. And in one of his quotes, what Quincy Adams says is, if your actions inspire others to dream more, learn more, do more, and become more, you are a leader. So clearly, this is a leader who believes that love is a better motivation. And the reason I believe he's, even though he's not explicit here, what he's talking about love is that it's almost impossible to inspire people in an atmosphere of fear. People are not inspired when there is fear. It's impossible to inspire people to dream more, to learn more, to do more, to become more in an atmosphere of fear. It's impossible to do that. The only way people are going to allow themselves to dream more, to learn more, to do more and become more is when they feel they are in an atmosphere where things are, you know, there is absolute, there's no fear. Things are fair. They will be listened to. They will not be discriminated against. They will not be shut down when they try to speak up and things like that. That's the only time where people will be inspired to do all these things, right? Now, having said this, it doesn't mean that using the strategy of love is always better than motivating through fear. And let me share with you some of the downsides of trying to motivate people through love, exclusively through love. Now, one downside is it can be difficult to take tough and hard decisions when you are motivated by love. If you are trying to appease your employees, you want them to love you, you want them to go over the moon for you, you know, that emotion can sabotage those situations when you need to take tough decisions or hard decisions for the business. That love may likely get in the way, right? That's one downside. Another downside is that some employees may take you for granted or can take you for granted and take your business for granted if your rules are flexible and there's no serious punishment for breaking the rules. Remember what I said about, you know, the principle of love. Using the strategy of love to motivate people focuses more on rewarding good behavior rather than punishing bad behavior. So when people see that, you know, there's no serious punishment if you break the rules or if you don't do something, right, it can create an impression that you can be taken for granted, that your business can be taken for granted. After all, if I break the rules, nothing serious is going to happen to me, right? The worst that will happen is I will not get rewarded, but I will not get punished, you see? So that's a signal that you're sending that, yes, you will only reward good behavior, but you will not punish bad behavior, you know? Another downside is that your trust may not always be reciprocated. Remember, you're dealing with human beings, right? And in as much as you may expect your trust to be reciprocated, to be given back, it may not always happen that way because you're dealing with human beings, and human beings are creatures that can be unpredictable because they have a mind of their own. They can change their mind. They can deceive. They are capable of good. They are capable of very good things, but they're also capable of very bad things, right? So because you're dealing with human beings, you cannot always expect as an absolute that your trust will be reciprocated, right? Some employees will likely betray your trust. In your career as an entrepreneur, it's very likely going to happen. Another downside of motivating through love exclusively is that you may be misunderstood as a weak leader, you know? And, you know, if you're always waiting for consensus or opinions, or you don't want to hurt somebody's feelings, you don't want to step on some of your employees, and you're delaying taking tough decisions or hard decisions for the business, when you do these things, you might be sending a signal that will make your employees perceive you as a weak leader. And being a weak leader doesn't help you because it can lead to other problems down the road. That perception doesn't work for you. And that's because human beings don't do well when it comes to weak leaders. We always expect our leaders to be confident, to be strong, to be able to show us direction, to be able to lead. Essentially, if you're going to look forward to somebody to lead you, you expect there's a certain expectation that that person has a strong mind, strong character, can be decisive. That's one thing about leadership. People love decisive leaders, leaders who can take decisions and take a stand. Human beings love those kinds of leaders, right? You can be anything as a leader, but you need to be decisive. People need to believe that when the time comes to make a decision, you will make the decision. That when time comes to take a stand, you will take a stand. But people don't really like leaders who are weak, who don't really take a stand, who are always dilly-dallying around issues, delaying making hard decisions and stuff like that. And you can be misconstrued as a weak leader, right? So now it's getting interesting because I've talked to you about the two sides. I've talked to you about fear. I've talked to you about the downsides of fear. I've talked to you about love. I've talked to you about the downsides of love. Now, and so far, it appears that none of the two are looking good, at least from what I've told you. I've told you ugly things about fear. I've also told you ugly things about love. And that's because they can always have their downsides. Even though they are on extreme sides of the spectrum, motivating exclusively through fear has terrible downsides. And on the other hand, motivating your employees exclusively through love has some major downsides that you cannot ignore. So the interesting question right now, which is like the elephant in the room, is what is my position? What personally, as John Paul, as somebody who works with businesses, I advise entrepreneurs, I help businesses solve problems that sometimes revolve around people. So sometimes I get called in, the employees are not performing the way they should. And by the time I ask a couple of questions and analyze the problem, it is clear that it's either a culture problem or it's a leadership problem. And maybe sometimes the leader is not leading the way they should lead. Maybe sometimes it can be one of the two things I've discussed here. Maybe they have been using the strategy of fear, or they've been using the strategy of love, you know, that sort of thing. So what is my position? Now, let me make my position clear for the record. My position is not to motivate through fear. My position is not to motivate through love. My position is to be fair. My position is to be fair. And let me explain what that means. Now, when I say my position is to be fair, I believe that human beings need a bit of fear and love, right? If you're a leader, motivating your employees exclusively through fear or exclusively through love will not work, because that's like an extreme position. I believe that human beings need a bit of fear and love. And I also believe that people need to feel loved and appreciated if they are going to follow your vision, be loyal to you, and make personal sacrifices for you. If you're looking to build a team of people who will believe in the vision that you have, people who will be loyal to you and the company, people who will make sacrifices for you by sacrificing their time, sacrificing their talent, sacrificing their experience. If you're looking for those kinds of people will only stick with you if they feel appreciated and if they feel loved. So that's where love comes in, right? But on the other hand, I also believe that people need to be afraid of the consequences of bad behavior and bad decisions. Employees who make bad decisions or who behave badly in your business cannot and should not be ignored. The moment you make it clear that bad behavior and bad decisions can go unpunished in your business, then you have created an interesting loophole that would haunt you and likely probably destroy the culture of your company. And that's because as human beings, we need to know that there are consequences for bad behavior. It's not just enough to reward good behavior. That's fine. It's good to reward good behavior so that at least you can give a reason for your good performance for those really talented and performing employees to stay. But you cannot ignore your bad performance. You can't give the impression that it is okay to behave badly, to perform badly, to make bad moves and bad decisions and go scot-free. The moment you do that, you're in trouble. So what I'm saying here is you need a mix of fear and love to function effectively as the right leader for your organization. And that's what I call fair. Because when somebody is fair, it doesn't mean that you can take the person for a ride. You know, fair is not absolute love. Then fear, on the other hand, too, is not absolute fear. It's just right there in the middle. A little bit of fear, a little bit of love. And in my opinion, a boss who motivates through fairness, if you're going to be fair, like I said, it will show in a couple of ways, and I'll give you some interesting examples. A fair boss, a fair leader is willing to negotiate. You don't think that your rules are rock solid. You're willing to negotiate, hear from the other side. You're willing to be consultative with your employees. You want to hear from the other side. You want to be sensitive but rational. So you're not ruled by emotions, such that you want to appease your employees, that anything they say will go. No, you'll be sensitive to their needs, but you'll be rational to the needs of your employees and only meet the realistic demands. For example, your employees are telling you that they need to take time off. You know, they need to go on leave. They need to go on leave. And they're telling you they need 90 days leave in a year. And they're trying to justify it to say work-life balance, you know. But 90 days is unrealistic, right? So even though that is what they want, it doesn't mean you have to give them what they want. You have to be realistic, because if you give into that demand, it doesn't favor the business. So you have to be fair and you have to be firm and you take a stand and say, you know, I hear you. I see you. You know, you guys, you deserve your leave. But 90 days is too much. I can only do 30 days. And that's exactly how it's going to stand. So you are being sensitive. You're listening. You're negotiating. But you are being realistic. You're not taking emotional decisions, right? Now, another characteristic of a fair leader, if you're motivating your employees through fairness, is that you take a tinge from the love side that I mentioned. You try to be friendly with your employees. You don't try to be distant. And when you can, you try to be informal. Because if you really think about it, your employees spend the major chunk of their day with you. Let's imagine they work with you from 9 o'clock to 5 o'clock. That's 8 hours. That's 1/3 of their natural day, right? So if people are going to spend 8 hours with you, at the minimum, it should be cordial. The relationship should be cordial. They should feel like you care. So, but that's, having said that, you can be friendly, you can be informal with your employees, but you have to make sure that you're not seen as a pushover. You have to make sure that you're not seen as a pushover who can be taken advantage of. And this can be very subtle, because in my experience, there are employees who don't understand boundaries. So because you're friendly with the boss, because, you know, the relationship is informal with the boss, you can walk up to the boss and, you know, share your concerns, speak up. And some people tend to abuse that relationship. Some employees tend to abuse that level of access. And sometimes it can border on disrespect, which is something you don't want, you know. So that's, like I said, there's no definite or clear way. It's one of those human things that you have to figure out on your own, you know. And you need to be able to call them out when they are crossing that boundary. To say, you know, I'm your boss. I'm doing the best to keep this place cordial and friendly. But with these things you're doing, you're crossing the line. You shouldn't speak to me that way. You shouldn't have done this way. It is disrespectful. You have to stand. You have to make that stand. And it needs to be clear, because these are the things that build the culture of an organization. If people feel that the boss is a pushover, or they can talk to you anyhow or treat you anyhow, it's going to cascade. Other people are going to see that and learn from that. And that is how the culture of your organization is going to be soured. So you need to pay attention to that. What I just said now requires quite a bit of emotional intelligence for you to know when, you know, it's good to be cordial, it's good to be friendly, but people shouldn't cross the line. People should still understand that you are the CEO. That because you guys are on a first name basis, because the atmosphere is cordial, doesn't mean people should abuse that relationship. So I think I've said enough about that. Another interesting feature that I believe a fair leader should have is that you need to have firm rules, right? So you have firm rules, but you have to apply the rules with a human face and with emotional intelligence. Unlike when you're ruling through fear, where the rules are non-negotiable, and then anybody who breaks the rules is punished. You tend to... Now, the way it happens in real life is quite different, and every context is different. And you have to pay attention to context as a fair leader. There's no way for you to be fair if you're not going to consider context. So before you apply the rules, you have to approach it with a human face, with emotional intelligence, and make a fair decision or fair ruling in any case. And then another interesting thing that I think should characterize a fair leader, especially when you're motivating your employees through fairness, is that, yes, you have to reward good behavior and performance, but you also have to punish bad behavior and bad performance. It's impossible to be fair if you're not doing the two of them. You cannot only be punishing people who behave badly without rewarding people who are performing well. You know, that's also a form of unfairness, because what it means is, it's okay for you to do your job well. You will not get rewarded, you know, but you only punish people who do bad stuff. So that doesn't help. To be fair, you have to reward good performance. You have to reward good behavior, but you also have to punish bad behavior and bad performance. Remember what I said, actions should have consequences. If you behave well, you get rewarded. If you behave badly, you get punished. It has to be clear. You might be friendly with your employees. You might laugh with them. You might attend family gatherings, social gatherings. You guys can be really close. But when it comes to consequences, you have to let them know that this is as firm as it gets. You break the rules, you perform badly, you get punished for it. There will be consequences. If you perform well, you behave well, there will be consequences for it. There will be good consequences for it. You get rewarded. So I think it's impossible to be a fair boss if you are not that balanced. You have to reward good behavior and punish bad behavior. And then another thing about fairness, when you're motivating your employees through fairness, is that you have to be willing to be tough. In those situations where the business requires a tough or hard decision to be made, you have to be the person to make it. You have to step up as a leader and make that tough choice. Sometimes that tough choice could involve letting go of some of your people, you know, as part of moves to save the company. Maybe the country, your economy is going through a recession, or the business has hit a bad patch, and the way it's going, some people have to be let go, right? You have to be firm and stand up to that situation, to the occasion. You have to rise to the occasion. You cannot afford to be seen as a weak leader. You cannot afford to allow the cordiality, the friendship, the love, the emotion you have with your employees color your eyes and delay you or make you postpone or procrastinate on an important decision. Remember what I said. Human beings love their leaders to be decisive. They need people who can make decisions, who can show direction. That's what people need. So you can be all lovey-dovey with your employees, you're cordial, you're friendly, but if the time shows up to make a decision that will favor the business, you have to be that person who stands up to say, guys, enough of the laughter, enough of the partying, we need to do this and we need to do this now. So the moment they see your serious face, they know, okay, this is time for business. No monkey business. This is like time for us to get down to business. So that's my own position on this. I believe that motivating people through fear is not sustainable and will backfire. I also believe that motivating people through love is not sustainable and will backfire. What I believe is sustainable in the long run and would make you an effective leader and would help you gain employees who will be loyal to you, who will make sacrifices for you, who will be leaning to learn more, do more, become more, is for you to be a fair leader. And a fair leader balances fear with love. A fair leader makes sure that there are consequences for actions. Good actions and good behavior will get rewarded. A fair boss will make sure of that. A fair boss also makes sure that bad behavior and bad actions will not go unpunished. So at this point in the episode, let's recap. I started this episode by talking about the two extreme schools of thought when it comes to how you relate with your employees, how you motivate your employees. Should you motivate your employees through fear or should you motivate your employees through love? So should your employees love you or should they fear you, right? I talked about those two extreme positions. And then I talked about the principle of fear, that people would work for you as long as they are able to avoid your punishment. And I talked a bit about fear. I talked about the disadvantages. And then I talked about love. I talked about the disadvantages too. And then, you know, I did this comparison, which is better. I gave views from Machiavelli and I gave views from John Quincy Adams, who in their own right are famous people, and they have these views on leadership, right? So, and then afterwards, I give you my own position. My position is not to motivate exclusively through fear, and I don't believe in motivating exclusively through love. What I believe in is to be a fair boss. And a fair boss is not a pushover. A fair boss is not a dictator. You know, you just have a bit of both worlds, because human beings will perform well. Human beings will be inspired if they are in an environment where they are appreciated. I mentioned this before. So there has to be love. There has to be an element of love, because these people are working for you. If you want them to be loyal to you, you want them to make sacrifices for you, there has to be an element of love. But I also believe that it's a wrong signal for you to give the impression that bad behavior or bad actions will go unpunished. It's also a bad signal if you give the impression that you are a weak leader. because you're allowing your sentiments and emotion and the love you feel for your employees get in your way of making tough and hard decisions that the business needs, right? So I hope I've done quite a job in exploring these two dimensions. There are many people who will still disagree with me because I still know a lot of people who believe that, you know, they will tell you, in my country, fear is the way to go. Employees have to fear you. If not, they're going to steal from you. They're going to cheat you. I am not denying your reality. I'm not even denying your experience. Maybe you have tried love before and it didn't work. Or maybe you tried to be fair and it didn't work. So I'm not going to deny your reality. Some other people are also going to say that, you know, I think love is the way to go. I think some of these people come from disadvantaged backgrounds. All they need is somebody to give them a chance, somebody to trust them. So it's always going to be a raging debate and an unending controversy in the world of entrepreneurship, because all of us have our different angles. We have our different perspectives. We have our different styles. So while it's okay to do what works for you, like I said, in this situation, I didn't tell you this is the best strategy. I told you this is my position. In my experience working with entrepreneurs, in my business, even in my own business and the other ones I've started before, I know that fairness works for me. And I've also been an employee before. I've worked in other places. And the ones I most remember, the ones I favorably remember, are the fair ones. I still, even though, yeah, they were tough, you know, at some point. Now I understand why they had to be tough, right? So that's something you really cannot take away from the conversation. So I just wanted to add my voice to this interesting controversy. Should your employees fear you or should they love you? Now, at this point in the episode, let's talk about our partners, Quezza. Quezza, K-U-U-E-Z-A. Quezza is doing interesting stuff for small and mid-sized businesses on the African continent. If you sell products and you are interested in exploring markets outside your local country, so if you're interested in exporting your goods, or you're interested in selling to customers in another African country, or even export your goods outside the African continent to markets like the US, Canada, Europe, you need to take a look at Quezza. So Quezza is available on the App Store and the Play Store. So if you sell products or you're looking to explore the export market, check out the Quezza Seller app. It's Quezza, K-U-U-E-Z-A. Check out the Quezza Seller app. And if you're a user, if you're looking to explore the range of products that are available on Quezza, download the Quezza user app. It's a K-U-U-E-Z-A user, Quezza user app. Another thing, there are four things I want you to consider at this point in the episode. The first is to join the insiders community. Now, this topic was inspired by a conversation I had with an insider. Now, she has had issues with her employees and she feels she's been taken for granted. And she told me about all the things she's done for these people and still they steal from her business. They do not appreciate, they feel entitled and things like that. And she was saying she thinks she needs to start acting. She thinks she needs to become a dictator, you know, and rule with the iron fist. So these are important conversations that can be very pivotal to the journey of your business. There are decisions, there are choices you make at certain points in your business that will totally and significantly impact what your business is going to look like in the next 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. So we had this conversation about these two angles, and I told her that the best way is to be fair. If you are fair over time, you will retain the good people, and then you will make sure that you weed out the bad people. And it's these kinds of conversations that are important. And I think the sad thing is many entrepreneurs are alone. Many entrepreneurs are isolated. So entrepreneurship tends to be a very solitary lifestyle. You're building the business, you're on your own, you're going through all these mental struggles, all this emotional turmoil. You really don't have somebody to talk to. That's exactly why we created the Insiders Community. The Insiders Community is a community of entrepreneurs who share ideas, they network, they collaborate, they leverage each other's talents, experiences, and all that. And we're creating a community, our own community, for people who are building businesses, right? Doctors have their communities, lawyers have their communities, even real estate agents have communities. Mostly it's entrepreneurs who are solo people. You have a name for it, solopreneurs, right? You don't have to be isolated. You can't have all the answers. You can't do it all on your own. You need other people, right? So join our community of insiders. Check us out at smallstarter.com/insiders. smallstarter.com/insiders. The second thing I want you to consider is to tell your friends, your smart friends, about this podcast. The topics I discuss on this podcast are very practical. These are things that entrepreneurs go through on a daily basis. There's nothing theoretical about the topics, you know, I address on this podcast, because I'm also on the field. I have boots on the ground, right? So there's no point taking you on some academic exercise, because for an entrepreneur who has a business to run, it doesn't have any utility or value when you're talking about theoretical stuff. So if you have smart friends who already run a business or are thinking of starting a business, recommend the Small Starter Business Podcast to them, and they are going to love you for it. So just let them, ask them to go search Small Starter Business Podcast. We come up as number one on Google, and they can explore the wide and extensive range of topics we have covered on this podcast, from how to raise capital, to how to boost sales, to how to hire the right people, to how to do startup strategy, to turnaround strategy, all sorts of interesting conversations that entrepreneurs typically have inside their heads. We have already digested the answers, and they are in the episodes of this podcast. The third thing I want you to consider is to subscribe to this podcast so that you get a notification every time we release a new episode. And when you can, leave us a five-star review. A five-star review is a pat on the back for us, and it also makes it easier for other people to find the podcast. So to leave us a review, you can do that at smallstarter.com/review. smallstarter.com/review. Again, I look forward to having you join us as our newest insider. And I look forward to exploring with you the problems, the challenges, the opportunities, the goals and the visions you have for your business. Until the very next episode, the key takeaway from today's episode I want to leave you with is you need to be open to adaptation, because entrepreneurship is always about adapting. You cannot stick to something that is not working because you feel that it's impossible to change. Anything can be changed. And that's the beauty of being an entrepreneur. You can set the rules by yourself. You don't have to wait for some board, some boss, some directors, or anybody to tell you what to do. One of the big benefits of what we do as entrepreneurs is that we can set the rules. And when you can set the rules and you refuse to set the rules, then you're not being practical. You're not being realistic. So if you're trying something in your business, maybe, for example, using today's episode, you've been trying to be very loving to your employees. You've been very lax and things like that, and it's not working. And you say, that's the kind of person I am. I cannot change. You know, you can change. You can change because you're an entrepreneur. There are very few professions in life that have the range of flexibility that entrepreneurs have. You can change. Anything can change, and you can change it. You can change the world. You can impact the lives of your customers. You can impact the lives of your employees. You can change how you run your business. Just give it a try. Don't be afraid of change. It's going to be uncomfortable. It's going to be disquieting. You may not like it, but it's in your favor. You have to change. And until the very next episode, I wish you all the very best. Cheers. Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Small Starter Business Podcast. To take our free business courses or join one of our signature programs for special entrepreneurs like you, head over to smallstarter.com to join our private community. See you inside.